New York. We've been operating for more than 3 years to promote community participation in TB and HIV/AIDS policymaking. And so today we have really a two-part symposium. The first part is focused on community-based volunteer health workers who have been engaged in TB service provision in Thailand and Bangladesh. So we're going to hear from two advocates from those two countries to talk about their experiences in doing research and also a program that actually provides services in Bangladesh. And then the second part of the afternoon is focused on community participation in clinical and operational research. And we'll hear from the experiences of three researchers in Brazil. And Ezio is going to chair that part. For the first part, I'd like to introduce Dr. Amara Sundaratna from Thailand. She is a well-respected scholar in reproductive health and gender studies. She has a PhD from the School of Development Studies at the University of East Anglia, England, and she has two master's degrees. She has been a professor at Mahidol University for more than 30 years and is currently deputy director of the university's Institute for Population and Social Research.
Thank you very much, Emily Bell, for your nice introduction. And good afternoon, everybody. So this session is very special because we are looking at the success stories from different countries, Bangladesh and Thailand, by using the village health volunteers to give the TB service in the community level. So my presentation is all about the result. This is the one part of the whole project implemented in five countries, as Emily Bell already told you. So that those five countries include Bangladesh, Brazil, Tanzania, Nigeria, and Thailand. So the first part of my presentation, I would like to share with you the situation in Thailand regarding the National TB Program. So as you may know from the WHO report that Thailand ranks second for the high burden countries, so we still have a lot of things to do for the TB services and TB control. When you are looking at this first slide, you will see some kind of information regarding the country situation, including the country response to tuberculosis in Thailand. So we have different levels of the program management that would be starting from the top level until the grassroots level. So from this slide, you will see that we have at the ministry level, we have the Department of Disease Control, and we also have the national anti-TB, and then we also have the Bureau of Epidemiology. And we also have a very close connection with the university people like myself. So from the university direction, we have so many studies, so many research, and so many collaboration between different countries and the Ministry of Public Health. And we also have the program in the prison that started since 1997. And we also work with the private sector, even we don't have a very success story regarding the private and the public sectors, because tuberculosis service is very new to the private sector. But anyway, we try our best to convince the private sector to coordinate with the government. And we also have the international donors or international organizations like the TUC, the RIT. The IT means the Regional Institute for Tuberculosis Study. This is some kind of collaboration between the Thai government and the Japanese. And we also have the organization implemented by the Dutch government, or KNCV. And we also have the collaboration with the World Health Organization. So this is all kind of, you know, country response in terms of the structure of the National TB Program. And as you know that we started DOTS services since 1996. And you can see that by the year 2002, the coverage is 100%. That means all the villages in Thailand, we do have the DOTS program for the TB patients. And I would like to share with you a little bit information about the situation in terms of the TB incidents. As you know that right now we have the incident rate. This is what we mean all cases for 142 cases per 100,000 population per year. And we also have still very high prevalence rate of all cases. This is all about 204 per 100,000 population per year. And you can see that the mortality rate is still high. It's 19 per 10,000, no, per 100,000 population. This includes the new case as well. And we have the MDR rate. This is about, you know, 0.9% per year for the MDR. So this is all about the situation in Thailand in terms of the TB incident, in terms of whatever the problem that we have to tackle for the next decade. So from this kind of situation, we have a lot of challenges, you know, to be implemented in the National TB Program. And from this kind of challenges, we have a lot of problems because there's no always success story in terms of the achievement, in terms of implementation. So I would like to share with you at least 4 points of the challenges for the National TB Program in Thailand. The first one, as you know that we have the health system reform starting in the year 2002. This is something of, you know, very change. I would say that this is a kind of change that happened to our health system because we introduced this kind of the health system reform to make the service available and accessible to all population with a very low cost. But anyway, there will be two sides of coins. You know, when you have some kind of, I would say, cheap service, and at the same time, people might think that cheap thing is no good. And at the same time, for the people who work with the Ministry of Public Health, they don't have positive ideas about the health reforms because health reforms mean you have to cut down a lot of budget and you have to restructure and rearrange all kind of things, particularly for the personnel at the ministry level, at the provincial and at the sub-district level. So the problem is that we are short of the personnel to work for the TB program. It's just not only TB program, it's all kind of health programs in Thailand that we have to allocate or to reallocate the personnel into a very, very, you know, at hand situation. And that is one of the negative point of view in terms of the health system interaction. And the second point related to the success of the TB program in Thailand is all about the political commitment. When I say political commitment, I would like to say that the political commitment has not been successfully communicated to the peripheral levels. The decreased managerial capacity in the context of health service reform staff at the regional offices has been reduced as well as the provincial district levels. This is what I already shared with you. And the next point regarding the change in Thailand is the initiation of the DOTS through village health volunteer. We have a lot of problems related to how to train or how to encourage the health volunteer to work at the village level for the DOT program. Because I didn't say anything for the slide number one. Okay, slide number two, you can see that this is Thailand map, And you can see that from the different red dots we have right now, 15 TB reference lab center throughout the country. Right now we have 14 units or 14 spots for the TB reference lab center. And now come to the main point of my presentation. This is all about what we call the achievement story of using the village health volunteer to be the TB educator or the TB service provision or TB service provider. When we talk about the village health volunteer in terms of TB provision or services, I would like to share with you what are they doing in terms of the TB provision or services. The original plan for having the village health volunteer is the idea of, you know, having the policy of integrated primary health care into health sector. So from that kind of thing, we recruited the committee members to be the village health volunteers to work for the Ministry of Public Health. And the DOT was introduced to the community because we adopted decentralization system so that we want to make the service accessible and available to all kind of, you know, to all levels and to all TB patients. And what do they do for the village health volunteers? The village health volunteer, they are not medical personnel. They are just the common people, but we assign them to work for the Ministry of Public Health. So what we expected from them is just to do the early case detection. Okay, early case detection, right. And then they also have some kind of responsibility on case caring and follow-up. And then we assign them to be the TB educator. So these sort of things, you know, have some kind of relationship or some kind of linkage between village health volunteers and the health worker at the community level. And apart from what we call TB services or TB responsibility, the village health volunteers are also assigned to be responsible or to work for another related health, something like MCH or, you know, all kind of communicable diseases and the school health education as well. So you can see that the village health volunteers, they are highly expected. They are not working for only one ministry. I mean, not only for the Ministry of Public Health, but they work for at least five ministries: Ministry of Interior, Ministry of Education, Ministry of Human Resources Development. So all kind of assignments, you know, just go to the village health volunteers. This is one of the loopholes of the policy or of the work that we push very hard to the village health volunteers to work for TB program as well. Oh, sorry, that's too fast. How many minutes left for me? Okay, so anyway, this is all kind of story that I want to share with you from my study. I want to share with you one more point in terms of the recruitment. The VHV or the volunteer health, the village volunteer worker, they are recruited from the community on the voluntary basis. They do not have salary. They just have only free medical care for themselves, not for their family. And they have no working hours. Whatever the health personnel or health worker at the sub-district level want to work with them, they just, you know, hold a meeting and then they share their experience among themselves, and the health workers will tell them what to do or what to be some kind of assisting responsibility that they have to assist the workers or the health worker at the community level. So you cannot expect, you know, full commitment from the village health volunteers because they have very low level of incentives for their efforts, their commitments, and their work responsibility. This is what we saw from our study, that there would be something that should be improved in terms of making or in terms of encouraging the village health volunteers to work for TB's program. And this is what I would say, the conclusion of my study, coming with too many points like training, incentive, and commitments. So this is the thing that I want to share with you. Right. And also, when we talk about the work commitment, the responsibility, and the efficacy of their ability or their work, we have to think about the resources and the budgets. This is all kind of problem that happened to Thailand in the sense that we do not have some kind of capability to reallocate the budget and the resources for the community, for the village health volunteers, for their work. And when we are running out of budget with the scarce resources, you cannot expect the mandates, or you cannot expect them to fulfill their mandates. The mandates mean that you have to go for work with the health worker, you have to look after the TB patient, and you have to, you know, detect the new case. This is all kind of mandates that we expect from the village health volunteers. And one of the things that I want to share with you from my research results, in Thailand, we do have gender biases in terms of health implementation or health system, because for women and men, they just consider that those who are the great carer are women, so all kind of things related to health provision is the duty of the women. Every time that we recruit the village health volunteers, you know, men refuse to join because they are saying that they have some other activity or some other responsibility to take care, like, you know, village community development. So this is what we call gender bias. And, you know, throughout the country, we have village health volunteers in each village, more than 2 and 3 person, because they have to divide among themselves, let's say 10 household or more than 10 household per one village health volunteer. So this is what we are saying, that we have too many female village health volunteers to work for tuberculosis. And when I interview the village health volunteer, I mean the woman, they said sometimes they got some kind of misunderstanding between themselves and the husband of the household that they visited, because, you know, it doesn't mean that every time that you visit the house that the woman have to stay at home, but sometimes they meet, you know, the husband, and then when they start talking, there would be some kind of, you know, suspicion, what kind of matter that they are talking about between the village health volunteers and the head of the household. So this is the kind of gender bias that I found in my research result. Right. So when we are talking about the village health volunteer, I came up with one conclusion in the sense that we need some kind of TB-HIV integrated in the community, because you cannot separate, you know, you cannot separate totally between TB and TB-HIV. Even there will be some kind of misunderstanding between the TB patient and the TB-HIV patient, because the TB patient, they are not willing to get the dose or the medication from the same clinic. They are saying that I myself, I'm the TB patient, I'm not TB-HIV patient, so what is the point, you know, to go to the same place for the services? So this is one of the main problems that we have to get it solved, you know, very, very soon. And we also think about the community mobilization. You know, in the Thai village, we use a lot of, you know, school authorities, the students or the pupils, you know, to spread, you know, the information or to disseminate the information to their parents. And from my research, I found that the parents, you know, they really believe in whatever their kids said. The kids show them that, you know, the TV calendar. This is what what I mean, that, you know, we come up with the TV information toolkits, and we produce, you know, the calendar that containing TV information starting from January to December. And then the kids, you know, they are the ones who read all kind of information to their parents. So I would say that community mobilization is one of the important approaches that I can use it in Thailand, not only Thailand, to other countries. And, you know, when you came here, you heard many talks about community mobilization. So I would say that community mobilization may probably be the right approach for the TB services. Okay, thank you very much for your attention. And I also thank to the Public Health Watch Project Open Society Institute for your generous support. Thank you again. Thank you.
Thank you, Amara. So we've now heard about one model of a volunteer health worker system in Thailand that is a government program. And we'll now hear from our speaker from Bangladesh, who's going to talk about an NGO program that relies very heavily on female volunteers as well. His name is Jalal Ahmed. He joined BRAC in 1980. In 2002, he opened up BRAC's office in Afghanistan. When he left Afghanistan in 2007, there were 4,000 staff in Afghanistan. He is now a program head within BRAC's public health program, based in Dhaka, and he looks after the field side within the health program. Jalal has an MPH from the London School of Medicine and Tropical Hygiene and has a master's in economics and a health certificate.
Thank you, Emily. Good afternoon. The title of my presentation is A Case of Shastra Shevika in Bangladesh. As you know, the Shastra Shevika is a Bangla word. In English, we call the health volunteers. In my short presentation, basically, we have been asked to present within 15 minutes time. So we broadly divided my presentation into three parts. The first part, I will tell briefly about BRAC. The second part, I will tell who are the Shastra Shevikas, what they do, where, how they select. And later part, I will tell how the Shastra Shevikas help in TB programs. As you know, that BRAC is a Bangladeshi NGO established in 1972, with the objective to alleviations of poverty and empowerment of the poor, especially the women. Till 2002, BRAC exclusively work in Bangladesh, never work outside the country as an organization, but provided tactical support and others in different programs, especially in the education sector in Africa sub-Sahara. In 2002, BRAC started their programs, shared their experience, initially first in Afghanistan, 2002, later on switch over to Pakistan and Sri Lanka, and in Africa continent. Presently, we are working in three countries, but we have a plan to expand this program to seven more countries. The three countries in Africa are, one is Tanzania and Uganda and Southern Sudan. BRAC Bangladesh, as you know, that it is one of the largest NGO in the world, probably, has a staff around over 100,000, and through their different programs, we have generated around 7 million jobs in Bangladesh. BRAC's TB program, initially we started in 1984 in one sub-district. Later on, we expanded this program to 10 more sub-districts in 1994. And at present, we are working, almost expanded these DOT services, two-thirds of the total countries, covering around 19 million population. This is the map of Bangladesh, where the colored area, BRAC is involved implementing the TB program. Shastra Shebika is the nucleus of BRAC's health program. We have introduced this concept in our health program in 1977, even before the declaration of Almata. She is a frontline volunteer. Average, she is providing services 250 households. And average, she works per day 2 to 3 hours. She provides involved. How the concept worked? The concept is like that. Shastra Shebika, the community is basically selected who will work for their community as a Shastra Shebika. After the selection, BRAC, the solid line, we provided the basic training and give them logistic support and a revolving fund through which she can buy the drugs and other contraceptives and other health products. After the completion of this training, Shebika's work involved the BRAC's programs in her catchment area, and also she support the government's program which are available at her villages. During this period, BRAC's responsibility is to conduct the refreshers training, monthly training. This training basically for reviewing her activities, what she did the last month, and also what she will do in the coming months, and keep our follow-up, replenish the drugs and health products if it is exhausted, and we provide the technical support to her. Shebika's, this slide basically showing the expansion of this program. Now, in 2007, till now, 68,000 Shastra Shebikas are working under the BRAC catchment area. More than 65,000 villages are covered, reaches around 90 million populations out of 140 million populations. We have a plan to expand this Shebika's approach to rest of the country, and it is around 110,000 Shastra Shebika will work in 2008. This slide showing what is the criteria for selections of Shastra Shebika. One of the main criteria of the Shastra Shebika is that she should be the member of BRAC microfinance programs. Microfinance, she is one of the recipient of the microfinance programs. She should be local resident, married, willing to provide voluntary services, socially accepted, and age not less than 25 years, and family should have an endorsement so she can work without any hesitations. And she received basically 18 days basic training, where 3 days intensive training on the tuberculosis, and she received monthly 1 day refreshers training regularly. broadly, if we divide, broadly we categorize our work, we'll see that Shivika is involved in promote the awareness of people through a household visit and different health education forum, provide treatment of common diseases, 10 basic diseases, tuberculosis, malaria, and acute respiratory infections. This, the last program, this is a pilot program, is now started in 10 sub-districts. So it is not expanded in other areas. She promotes some health communities and the contraceptives, and she also mobilized the pregnant women for antenatal care and immunization for children and women. We saw that as this program is working in our country since 1977, and we reviewed our activities, and we saw who basically sustained in the program, we found that one of the main important criteria that Shivika should be selected properly, as I mentioned the criteria which in my previous slides, and the systematic training and the and supervision is one of the important issues, and also the institutional support is from both from organizations and also keep the as she is involved with different government programs, so she should be aware, they should know about her role at the village level. And to provide them regular financing, so basically she gets the revolving fund at a certain amount for buying the drugs, and also she's involved with the microfinance program, so she regularly receives the microcredit. As you know that the BRAC has a big microfinance program. Last year, 2006, we provided microcredit loan to 6 million women received loan from us. What she benefits after this from the program? One of the benefits, obviously, she is receiving, that is that she is earning some from the selling the health products. She received the microcredit loan, and also she gets benefits from other BRACS programs, and some kind of empowerment she feels because her knowledge improved. She also recognized in the village and also other government officials, as she is contact point at the village level. And also, this is also another study we have seen that as she is involved very much with the health program, her family also benefited a lot for her involvement in the health program. So we are saying that her family also gets some kind of benefit as she is working as a Shastra Shivika. So this is basically the concept of the Shastra Shivika I mentioned. And now the last part of my presentation is the how she involved in TB programs. She basically do the four broad category of activities she did. One is the mobilizations and identification of suspected TB patients, help in organizing the sputum collection and smearing centers in the remotest areas, provide dots and continue the follow-up, and refer complicated cases. This is basically broad she does. Because of the Shivika's involvement in this program, what we have seen, the TB program, the DORT services basically brings to the home as she is at the village level, so people are getting benefit directly. And she also created demand through her community awareness. involvement in different health education forum and household visits. She also involved, as she is that community, she also has a role to reduce the social and cultural barriers like the stigma and establish the linkage between community and the services and help for referral also, as I mentioned in my earlier slide. This is some of the pictures about the Shevika, the right-hand side, she is the Shevika, who is providing dots at her home every morning. The first intensive phase, the patient comes to her, so she gives the dots at her home. Then after this one, she basically go to different households and also attend the different education meetings as per schedule, according to the schedules. As here we are seeing where a housewife is greeting her, and she's helping, is one of the facilitating the health education forum in the rural areas. And she's helping in the sputum smearing centers. One of the main criteria of BRAC's program is strictly follow up and look after the quality of the program, of the TB program. That's why supervision and monitoring is one of the important things which BRAC staff regularly doing in a routine basis. And if found any shortcomings or any feedbacks, we provide the initial, we immediately correct, and we trained her in the refreshers training. We say that these are the faults we receive, and so in future you have to correct these things. So it's a continuous process, and this monitoring and supervision is inbuilt within the program. This is a next two slides, basically giving the results. Is the I have shown till 2006. The red line is the BRAC's areas, and this is the rest one, the national coverage. So you see that the BRAC's area, the detections of TB patient is 80% till 2006, I am showing. And the national average, it was 71%. The success rate, it is 92%, the national one, the 93%, the BRAC's areas. My conclusions is on this Shevika is that Shevika basically fill up the gaps, critical gaps in human resources of the government health system at the village level, because in our country, the government health workers are at the higher level, so she is at the village level, so she is providing, filling the gaps. Increase accessibility to services and patient adherence to the treatment. One of the study, you know, that if you want, I can give you the study, is done and it is published in WHO bulletin. It's shown that the per Shevika area, the cost is $64 for the treatment. And the non-Shevika area, it was shown $96 per patient. So it is cost effective. It also reduces the delays of diagnosis, because as Shevika is there in the village, so it is easily to identify the patient, those who have a cough. So 3 weeks cough. So it reduces the delays the diagnosis. Increase the case detection and cure rates. And the last, not the least, is a sustainable model, in the sense that she is in that village, she is residing in that village. So the empower, the knowledge she received from BRAC's, and this will remain in the village. So this model, we anticipate that it will sustain. So this is in short about our program. Thank you.
We now have about 15 minutes for questions. So if you have any questions for either Jalal or Amara, we'd be happy to take them at this point.
I think we should invite Amara and Jalal to join us here.
So if you have a question, please go to one of the microphones. There are two. And if you could identify your name and organization and the country where you are from. And also, please direct your question to either Jalal or Amara.
Thank you. My name is Dr. Lydia Mungerere. I come from Uganda. I work with TAS for the AIDS Support Organization. And I'm sorry I missed the first presenter, but I'm really very interested in the BRAC program. It's a wonderful model for us to replicate in our countries. But I just had two small issues. The first one was we have community-based organizations of women who want to do a lot of work in the community. But I just wanted to look at your criteria. Maybe it is different cultural and customary circumstance that we live in, but when you put them married, I wanted to ask, are women in our community actually supposed to be married? But unfortunately, those who are infected with HIV and TB, many have been thrown out of the home. So they are married, but they are actually single. And I wanted to find out why you did that. And my second question was that, do you ever use peers as shabikas? These are people who have actually had the disease and they've suffered from it and they've recovered and they can actually do wonderful work as peers. Do you ever use those as your shabikas? Thank you.
Thank you. I don't know, are you hearing? Thank you for your nice questions. You are absolutely right. You know that it is a cultural, for the context, we said the married. We put these things, as she is selected by the community, if she is unmarried, after the marriage, she migrated to the other areas. But recently, we are relaxing this one because as program is expanding to the most of the part of the country, so, wherever she goes, she can work. So this is not strictly following at present. And you are absolutely right. We have expanded this program in Afghanistan. So this model we adapted, modified, and implemented. So for information, we are saying that at present, there are around 5,600 community volunteers are working, plus minus 5,600 or around. So they're following this model, and we found that it is working well. So I think you are, according to the country context, respecting the social cultural context values, we should have to finalize the selection criteria. Regarding the pair, I think that patients also sometimes have a significant role, and we are also following these things very strictly. That's
there are many education forums. We have said only one education forum is women's are getting education. But also we have a forum where the old patients are coming. They are explaining, describing their experience and how she got cured and what to do, and where she will get the services, and even if it is a complications has arise, so what to do. So this is a very important forum, and I did, as I have a time limitation, so I have gone very short, briefly, but this is one of the very important and very good forum through which this program has a good effectiveness we have seen.
Next question. We can take two questions at a time.
Thank you. I'm Janine from the School of Public Health, University of Western Cape in South Africa. I wanted to ask the first presenter if the village health volunteers were part of the government employees, or they were just people recruited in the village. And if they was part of the working with the public health sector, and the main issue was about incentives and low commitments, how can then the government ensure that, you know, there's that they can increase the commitment or incentives for village health workers? Because we know that somehow at a certain point, community involvement contributes a lot to the health system. But what can the government then do to maintain the community health workers so that they can continue to deliver the service? The second question is to the second presenter. Well, I don't know well about the culture in is it Bangladesh? Yeah. With this model, we can see that it's about women. But I don't know now those women who are going to visit male patients, what is the perception? Is it culturally accepted? If it's culturally accepted that it's not culturally accepted, then what can we do to involve male in community participation? Because I don't think that the battle is just for women to fight TB and HIV. Males as well has a certain kind of, you know, could participate. But how can we remove that gender biases? Thank you.
Maybe we should let the panelists respond for a second before we take another question.
Okay. Thank you so much for such a wonderful questions regarding to who are there and who are, and are they working with the government or not, and what kind of attempts or policy that the government can do something on the incentive. So this is a very big research questions that I had in mind, you know, for many years in terms of encouraging the local people to work for the Ministry of Public Health. As I told you before, that the village health volunteer, they are not working for just only one ministry. They are, I would say, you know, 5-in-1, or 2-in-1, or 3-in-1, or whatever. So this is what is the what we call the weakness of the health policy in terms of using the people living in the community, you know, to work with the government. But the idea or the concept behind is that we need some kind of, you know, commitment or some kind of responsibility from the people who are living in that community, so that we can keep the program, you know, sustainable. Because sometimes we talk a lot in Thailand in terms of the incentives, and we don't see that incentive will be one of the best policy to keep things, you know, go on or to keep things sustainable. But I do agree with you that, you know, if you have empty stomach, you cannot work very well. So what the Thai government do for this kind of incentive program is that the government try to increase, you know, all kind of assistance regarding to the health condition, regarding to their living standard of the village health volunteers. But even so, what the government can do so far is just only to give the village health volunteer for the medical care and to give them some kind of spectrum training. You know, they just take the village health volunteer to Bangkok or to the big city like Chiang Mai to have some kind of training. So this is the kind of commitment, or because you get the pride of yourself, you know, to work with the community. But I would say that this is the best policy or not, because, you know, people need more than that. And the second point that you are talking about, whether the village health volunteer work for the government or not, or work for the Ministry of Public Health or not, they do work for the Ministry of Public Health, because at the grassroots level, we have health workers stationed at the health center. So each health center, they are mandated by 2 or 3 health workers, and then, you know, there are so many things to serve or to give the community members in terms of
health provision, health promotion. That's why they need the people who live in the same community or who live in the who live within the community to help the help do to help the health worker for that kind of commitment. So I would say that the village health volunteer, they do work for the Ministry of Public Health apart from other ministries like Ministry of Education. Is that clear according to your doubts? Thank you.
Regarding my part, you know that I think Bangladesh, although it is a Muslim country, but it is in a very orthodox type of Muslim country. You know that you have seen that 68,000 Shastra Shivikas are working. So basically she has access to both the male and female, so it is not a, in the context of Bangladesh, it is not a issue that a male cannot go to the female for treatment. So it's we have not seen it as a problem. But in Afghanistan we have seen these things, you know that we have provided training to male and female, so males, females are basically access to female patients and the male have access to the male. So this is a little different. Everything, you know that depends on the which country you are working and you have to adapt and according to the requirement and the respecting the values of that country.
Do you have another question?
Yes. Xiao Ling Wei from China. I'm quite interested in the seeing the house volunteers going on in the two countries. My experience is that in China, everybody knows that the Barefoot Daughter initiative in the 50s, and while as the economy kind of develops very quickly, the Barefoot Daughters became kind of private daughters. And there are lots of problems over the widow daughters right now, we can say in the TB care. For example, kind of over-prescription and, you know, the low quality of care, etc. So I would like to know in Bangladesh, the Shabika, in terms of what can we say from their point of view regarding the financial sustainability in the long run? Because you've seen they are provided for the microcredit support and income from for sales of the health products that could lead to the future problems as we identified of the widow daughters in China. Thank you.
You know that Shabika, I have not shown this slide as I have the time limitations. If I don't know whether the organizer will allow me to show the slide. One slide I have through which I have shown that the Shabika basically average, she works 2 to 3 hours in a day. So the time she lost for the program and the money or the as she earned is more or less same, you know, even then if you consider the financial context. Basically, you know that we have seen that a Shabika losing 2 to 3 hours per day. So it is around, in our local currency, it is called the 400 takas she is losing in a month. And through selling her health product and also providing other health services, she is earning the same amount of money. So community pay her time. This is basically, this is other than the microfinance loan, she is receiving this financial support from this program also. I answered your questions, sir?
Yes. My question is more regarding to the point of view that you allow Shabika to kind of give the health products and get profits from those. And in the long run, you know, for example, in the video daughters in China, we identified the government provided around $8 for DOT part of the patients. But in reality, this amount was much lesser for their compared with profits they can charge for the patients over prescription. You know, is there going to be such a problem in the Shabika product in the long run? Maybe you are, you know, okay at this time.
No, I think you are absolutely right. We are there is some possibility of irrational drug use, irrational over prescriptions, because if she sells more, then she can get more. So the, as it, one of the slide probably you have seen, there is a strict follow-up on the, in terms of quality and supervision. So we are very much serious about these issues. Shibika is basically, you know, that earning in two ways. Apart from her recognition, she is basically getting a microcredit loan from and also the some she is selling some health products. So this basically too is the financial part. But the main part of her work is the recognition by the community and also from the local government. You know, that's the important part. And she feels empowered that she's as a part of development. You know, the development partners. So this is the one of our recognitions. So whenever the government worker, for example, the other health providers comes to the village, they normally used to go first to the Shibikas and talk with her, and then afterward they go to the other areas. So this is one of the, I think, the great incentive for her.
Okay, we have time for two very brief questions. First, if the woman in the back could state her question, and then you as well, and then we'll take the final round of answers.
Thank you very much. I am Dr. Kulkarni. I am from the Gambia in West Africa. I work for the TB control program in the Gambia. My question is addressing Dr. Jalal. He said the Shabikas buy their drugs and health commodities. Well, my understanding by drugs, I don't know what drugs he meant, but I do understand what health commodities he's talking about. I was just interested in knowing what drugs is it that they buy, because in countries like, say, for example, Zimbabwe and the Gambia where I have worked, it's the Ministry of Health that provides the drugs to these volunteers. So I was just interested in knowing what drugs they buy. Thank you.
Just take the second question and then...
Yeah. I'm Dinesh Jain from India, working for Swissamos and GLRA. My question to Jalal was that when the government program and the Swasthya Sevika program are showing the same success rate, the same cure rate, like I don't understand that, you know, why the government... is showing the same rate. So the Swasthya Sevika should work in for the dots as well, because then the government could do that and the Swasthya Sevika can do some other work as well. And also whether the BRAC program is addressing any undernutrition and poverty problems of the community. Thank you.
My friend was in line, so if you can allow him one question.
Hi. We might have time at the very end for additional questions, but we have a whole program.
I'm about to leave.
Perhaps we could... Perhaps
there's another question, it's actually a comment.
Okay. Just very, very brief.
I'll be brief. I think for the past few days, we've been listening to community participation and input. And I think it becomes critical now that your department, the World Health Organization, as well as the union, start looking at a comprehensive policy dealing with how communities can really become involved in TB care and treatment. Because if you look at the input and the role that these people are playing, it's quite critical. I can understand that when Mr. Ahmed actually started his presentation, he started with a very simple slide saying volunteers don't get paid, not because they are worthless, but because they are priceless. I think it's quite important that one needs to understand it. But beyond that, when you go into the areas where poverty is actually serious in nature, then volunteerism becomes one of the opportunities that creates employment. And given that, a comprehensive policy needs to be looked at. by yourselves and see how that can actually start implementing or be implemented throughout the whole of the world. I think it's quite critical. In closure, whilst you were busy doing your presentation, Mr. Ahmed, I've actually recruited two ladies from South Africa that is going to join you. Thank you very much.
As we are running short of time, so I'm answering very short. The drugs you are saying, that is a very basic drugs. You know that she is basically treating the 10 common diseases like the cold, fever, like this type of diseases. So she is a WHO prescribed committed volunteers. The designated drugs she can keep and she can sell at the village level. This is one of the same was regarding the programs you said that the governments and the I'm not saying that the government program or the you know that the government is in Bangladesh, you know, the government is main implementing basically manage, responsible for the TB program. And the areas you have seen, the whole country is divided by the different areas. 28 different NGOs are involved in implementing these programs. So the areas which I have shown in the blue area is the area where BRAC is working. So I have shown that in the areas where BRAC is working, so what are the case detection and the cure rate. But it does not mean that the other NGOs are not they are also working well. So it's a cumulative effect both from the government and then also the NGOs are both are working together. So this is more in short.
Thank you very much. Let's give a round of applause for our first panel. Okay. We'll now pass it over to Ezio, who's going to introduce the next half of this symposium. Ezio is a lawyer by training. He's one of the early HIV/AIDS activists in Brazil. He was one of the first members of Pela Vida, an organization of people living with HIV in Brazil. And for more than 5 years has also been very engaged in TB in Brazil, including by founding a forum of NGOs fighting TB in Brazil.
Thanks, Emily. Well, it's my pleasure to introduce the first speaker, who is the manager of the Transmissible Diseases Program in the city of Rio de Janeiro, Bettina Duravni. Dr. Duravni has been running the program since early 90s, and she is also engaged in coordinating the TH Rio, the TRIO project, which belongs to the CREATE Consortium in Rio de Janeiro. Bettina is a long-time manager of these programs and remarkable activist.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Ezio, very much for your kind presentation. I would like to thank the organizers of this symposium to invite me to share with you some of the lessons that we've been learning in Brazil. And we are shifting the issue a little bit here. We are going to be talking more about the participation of activists in operational research. So the experience I'm going to share with you today is concerning the TRIO project that is part of the CREATE Consortium that actually has three projects developed in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, South Africa, and Zambia. Those are all projects related to TB and HIV. And that's why I'm going to talk a little bit about activism in AIDS and HIV/AIDS in this context. So I think it's important to start saying that the right to a free and universal health system in Brazil is very clearly stated in our federal constitution and in our universal health system. In our universal health system is universal and free one. Of course, this does not mean that we don't have problems, but this sets the stage for a lot of the achievements that the NGOs, especially in the HIV and AIDS field, have achieved in the last 20 years. I'm starting to showing you some characteristics of the AIDS activism in Brazil. I think it's important because we are going to be talking about TB and HIV, and in Brazil we have a very well-known AIDS program, and it's unique in terms of the participation of the society, and it happens because we had a very early governmental response, but also because a strong civil society participation was actually in all decision levels. And we had a balanced prevention and treatment approach from the beginning. In Brazil, we have been distributing antiretrovirus for free since the mid-90s. And the reason why I'm showing you the characteristics of the HIV response is because the TB is not exactly like this. And actually, we didn't have for many years any kind of organization to deal with the TB problem in Brazil. That's why we are actually learning a lot from the NGOs and the civil society organized in Brazil and that works with HIV and AIDS. This is also some background information about Rio de Janeiro, where this project has been developed. We have this, our TB incidence is 100 per 100,000 people, and our HIV prevalence in the general population is below 1%. I know that these numbers are not quite impressive as they are in other countries, but even with this incidence and prevalence, TB is the leading cause of morbidity and mortality among the HIV patients in Brazil and in Rio de Janeiro. I already told you that the antiretrovirals are available for free in the public sector, and our current legal recommendation is that patients with CD4 under 3050 are eligible to receive antiretrovirals. In Rio now, we are actually seeing around 34,000 patients in our public services. And it's also worth to mention that IPT, the prevention, the TB prevention therapy, is recommended by the national guidelines. So it's, although it's a national recommendation, it's rarely used. So the study that I'm going to present today, and with a special emphasis with our interface with activism, is the impact of widespread use of TB preventive therapy for patients with access to antiretroviral therapy in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. So this is a map of Rio de Janeiro. Those blue dots are actually our clinics. They are spread all around the city, and they are concentrated in the south part of the city because there is where most of the population is actually living. All those cities are actually managed by the health department, and the patients are, in most of these, virtually 100% of these clinics, they have TB and HIV programs. The study is implemented in phases. We start two clinics every 2 months, and we actually started in 2005, so we are now enrolling the last two clinics. I want to give you some of the baseline characteristics of our patients. We are actually seeing almost 15,000 patients, and what we consider eligible for the intervention are those patients that didn't have prior TB, already had taken INH or both. And from September 2005, we had 2,000 new patients entering the system, and we have been reviewing 36,000 charts to get the information necessary to plan and develop the intervention. So, and what is our intervention? Our intervention is actually a very simple one. We are training the healthcare workers. We are developing educational materials for doctors and patients. We have clinical summaries that are helping physicians making their decisions because some patients have big charts like they've been following for 15 years, 10 years. Sometimes it's difficult for the doctor to really see what the patients already have in terms of opportunistic infections or other interventions. We are also giving a strong emphasis on policy and advocacy activities. We have weekly supervision of the clinics and we produce reports. We have weekly meetings and we have two annual meetings with all the units that are under intervention and also with the trio staff. These are very important moments where we get feedback from the clinics, from the nurses, the doctors, and we try to learn and correct what's not going so well. So one of the very important part of our intervention is the training. These are some numbers of trained healthcare professionals, but also activists that we have been training, mainly about TB, HIV, PPD, and counseling. It's important to say that although the IPT has been recommended in Brazil for many years, we had to retrain most of the healthcare workers, because even the tool like a PPD or the TST were not actually being done very well. So we had this big effort in training everybody to scale up the IPT intake. So, well, I'm sorry this is in Portuguese, but I'm going to try to show you. This is one of the important educational materials that we have developed, and this is also to show you that from the beginning of the project, we have established the participation of the activists and people from affected by TB and HIV, and they helped us to develop this message. So on the right side, you can see there is a message about HIV. So if you have HIV, you should do the TB test, because TB can be prevented. And here we say, if you have TB, do the HIV test, because HIV can be treated. So what we are trying to build here is a win-win situation, of course, showing that you can have access to good care even if you already have TB or HIV. And here what we are saying is that this health center, because these are posters that are in the health centers, so we say that you can talk to anyone in this health center. They are going to help you. This is also a very important educational material. This is more driven to the patients. This is a very popular magazine that all the HIV patients know very well in Brazil. It's a publication totally dedicated to support of adherence, dealing with adverse events, and explaining things about the treatment. And we worked together with the editors of this magazine, and we had this special issue totally dedicated to the preventive treatment of tuberculosis. And it's my pleasure to say that this artist is seated right here. She's one of the activists in Brazil, and they collaborated in the content of this material and also with the beauty of it. Thank you. So this is a more recent material when we are trying to bring together TB and HIV, and we are also trying to reach our doctors with a more clear and straightforward message about the relevance of TB and HIV, just to show you that we are actually bringing TB information the same way that our doctors receive HIV and AIDS information. Because you know that HIV and AIDS information is packaged in many, many interesting manners with nice folders, texts, and so we are trying to do the same with TB to really get the doctors to pay attention in this important co-infection. So I want to talk now about our community advisory board. This is our CAB was established within the TRIO study, even before we started the intervention. So all those materials I've been showing you were actually developed together with our CAB. So what are the functions? They advise us and monitor the decisions and developments within the scope of TRIO. And they are totally independent from the Transmissible Disease Coordination at the Health Secretariat. And they have they've developed and they have their own statutes, and they have autonomy to define their own role. The representatives of the CAB are people living with HIV/AIDS, NGOs, health professionals, university representatives, and all members are volunteers. Of course, we provide a good infrastructure for the meetings. We try to do a good job in terms of keeping them informed about everything that's going on in the study, not only about what's going on in terms of the progresses in terms of the science of the study, but also we try to inform them of the difficulties, because this is a very operational research. It is developed in all the clinics are public clinics, and they are so they suffer of the same problems of the whole system. So every time we have a problem, we discuss it and we get feedback from them. So they look after issues related to human rights, ethical considerations, voluntary participation, and they review the study protocol in accordance with the rights and responsibilities established under the Brazilian law that specifically deals with the participation of human subjects in research. I think that at this point it's important to mention that all the CAD members were also trained in good clinical practices. We have been giving them all the... this is an ongoing process, of course, giving them all the tools to actually be critic about the development of the study. So we offer training in TB, HIV, but one of the main issues we did from the beginning was that they should be very aware of what are the good clinical practice to really follow the study in the best way. So also we hope that within the CAB we can assist in community mobilization concerning prevention of TB in people living with HIV/AIDS. These are some of other characteristics and duties of the CAB. We provide participants and the community an independent source of information about the resource. So the trio staff is not the only source of information about the study. The CAB members are also a very important source of information. And they contribute to the study team in planning, development, and implementation of the research. And follow the development of the research, ensuring that emerging issues are considered by the study team. This is very important because we are, our view is from the health department, is from the clinic's view, and so the CAB is really, really important to give us another perspective in terms of what is going on and what are the things that we have to correct and improve. I'd like to highlight some of the most recent advances we had that are not only related to the TRIO study, but to the whole policy and advocacy and Rio de Janeiro. So the TRIO PAC team was structured. This was a real important thing, meaning that we now have people in the TRIO study that is dedicated to the policy and advocacy activities. So this has really been useful, not only in the interface with our CAB, but in developing other activities that are being very important to the study. We recently have had a community and research workshop that was organized by ESIO, and this was a very important workshop because after this workshop, we had a renewed interest in participating in our CAB. Our CAB was totally renovated because this was a very interesting workshop. And after this, our CAB was totally renovated with new participants, broadened participants, and I think that we should have more of these experiences in the future. We just did, like a couple of weeks ago, we finished our first training of 23 HIV activists. And one of the main issues that we could learn from this first experience is that there is a lack of TB treatment literacy among the HIV activists. They are very well informed about AIDS and HIV and antiretrovirus. But when it comes to talk about TB, there's still a lot of room to improvement. They had a lot of questions. It was a very dynamic training. And they are also very interested in research methods. They asked a lot of questions on how they can really understand what is the study and what are the opportunities to participate as volunteers in studies. So I think that also this is this was only a first step of something that we are going to really invest a lot of time. And the way we are building this experience is that we want this to be a two-way street. We want the CAB and the activists also to train the researchers. We think that there's no way that we are going to go there and teach them about TB science or study designs without getting a lot of information on how to work better in terms of counseling, adherence, and many other issues that they know better than we do. And as I already said, we have a clear need for future meetings. I'm going to present some of the barriers or the challenges that we've been facing in TRIO, and that's why we need to be actually collaborating very, very close to the activists, because we need their help to overcome these difficulties and barriers. So as you can see here, our HIV doctors, they are much more keen to adopt the HIV part of the guidelines than the TB part of the guidelines. They are very adherent to... We are used to talk about adherence from the patient's perspective, but this is from the doctor's perspective. So they are much more adherent to PCP prophylaxis, to CD4 monitoring, to viral load testing. But when it comes to TST or IPT, there is a very low use of these tools. So this is the main... this was a poster that we presented yesterday, and this is a very important challenge for us and for the activism. We also had interesting findings in one qualitative inquiry that we did, interviewing TB, HIV physicians, nurses, and local administrators. And they said that they think the HIV patients have resistance to the TST because the TST takes a lot of time, and they are kind of afraid because they don't understand exactly what is the meaning of the positive TST test. Also, that the complexity of the HIV treatment and HIV patients' style of life are important limitations for TB prevention, and that they are also concerned about IPT adverse events, and isoniazid is the drug that is used for IPT in Brazil. And we have been following more than 400 patients since the beginning of this study. We had only 15 adverse events. All of them were very mild, and only one case of hepatotoxicity, and it was a mild one. So, but still, the doctors are concerned about the adverse events effects of isoniazid. So it's also something that we have to work. In terms of next steps and future strategies, mainly focusing on policy and advocacy, we clearly need new communication strategies for the physicians. We think that the recently released Stop TB statement is an important tool, because we want to show that what we are saying and promoting is actually a consensus, an international consensus, and a good clinical practice. And we also want to bring prominent researchers, as it's so common in HIV and AIDS to talk about TB, to let the doctors know that TB is an important problem. It's not important only for patients with HIV, but it's an important public health problem in Brazil. And this is a good way of promoting this to talk about this problem. New training models for health professionals, and learn from the HIV community how to improve our messages. We clearly think that we can learn a lot from this very well-succeeded experience of the activism in Brazil. We also think that we need more language-sensitive materials. Portuguese is kind of neglected around for some of the materials, so we have to overcome language barrier. This is important for our activists. Most of the meetings and everywhere, the main language is English, so we think that we have to promote more some facilitators to get our activists more engaged in international meetings and workshops. We want to raise awareness about TB among HIV community. Local TB and HIV working group is one of the ideas that we have, that we could actually establish a local, and when I mean local, I mean in Rio de Janeiro, within the Rio de Janeiro Health Department, to really guide us with the community participation and what to do to make the two programs to collaborate better. And all our efforts are actually designed to improve the Brazilian health system, because it doesn't make any sense to make a parallel system. So we are actually working together and this is also crucial for the sustainability of this effort of scaling up IPT, getting a better collaboration between the TB and the HIV programs. A clear message that CREATE has and TRIO also and the other projects. And I think that's very important, is that we have to find TB. The undiagnosed TB is common in people living with HIV/AIDS. So also, when we are implementing IPT, we have to rule out TB before we start the prevention treatment. So actually, when we promote IPT, we are also promoting the intensified case finding among people living with HIV, which is very important. We have to treat TB. And early treatment saves lives. We know this. We know this story from the HIV/AIDS. And this is so very true for TB. And we have to prevent TB. So the IPT works. There is enough data out there showing that. And this is what we are trying to achieve in our study. Thank you very much for listening.
Thank you, Bettina. Thank you for the presentation. The next speaker is Dr. Afrano Kritsky. Dr. Afrano Kritsky from the Federal University of Rio de Janeiro. Dr. Afrano is the research who publishes most of papers and findings regarding tuberculosis in Brazil, and we are very proud to have such a great scientist engaged in these efforts to also look for the community engagement in TB and TB and HIV. So, Afrano, please.
Thanks for the invitation to participate in this meeting. I thought it would be the last one, so I'm surprised to be the second or the before Ezio. So I was invited to tell you the Brazilian experience regarding the research, interaction between research and TB control and TB HIV control efforts in Brazil that has been taken last years. First of all, I'd like to outline the context, the topics. I will tell you briefly how about science and technology in TB control in Brazil from 70s until 90s. Afterwards, creation of RedTB is a Brazilian TB research network and the specific coordination areas. It was created in 2001. And after that, 2004, we've learned that we needed to include a social mobilization area inside in our network. And the last is the ICORTA project that was started in 2005, but the application was made in 1993, in Brazil, in the world, the following WHO statements, we could control TB using existing tools. It means using smear bacilloscopy to detect 70% of patients and to achieve cure rate of 85% using first-line regimen. Obviously, to continue BCG vaccination in newborn. In that time, was not considered a priority by WHO research, interaction with AIDS program, and also inclusion of civil society. That was the scenario in that some years ago. What happened? Obviously, DOTS was implemented in several countries, has been taught by Peter Small this morning, but unfortunately, the incidence is still increasing, mainly where we have a high burden of TB and HIV. So fortunately, last year, Stop TB statements with WHO, they launched a global plan that includes PANDOTS, increased detection, case detection, has been explained why by Peter Small this morning, new emphasis on TB, MDR, and SDR. The interaction TB and HIV control programs has been emphasized very, very quickly, and also research in civil society. Finally, we were invited to take part in this scenario. In Brazil, from 1990s, Brazil is a developing country in the South America. From that, the last three decades in my country, we didn't have any industrial policy on the development or innovation, or any evaluation of utility or cost-effectiveness of the incorporation of the new technologies in public and private sectors. I'm not talking only about TB here. That's the Brazil scenario at that time. You can see here is Minister of Health, so Health Services. He's a Minister of Education, Universities, Technology Schools. Here's a Civil Society, NGOs, and Health Council. Here's a Minister of Science, Technology, Researchers. Here's Minister of Industry and Trade. It's private and public industries. There was no coordination about science technology in Brazil, and I assume that it's occurring in the majority of developing countries. So we, knowing that, in that scenario, in 2001, we had two foresight seminars in Rio de Janeiro. At that time, Brazil, TB was out of control using existing tools, and the aim of the seminar was to identify strategies that enable the country for development and also evaluation of new products, vaccines, diagnostic drugs, and also new strategy for health control. So it was like a consensus. We achieved a consensus that we do need to work together, TB control programs and research industry, I'll tell you afterwards. But in that time, 2001, the question that were raised was, do we want to have access to research in new technology, and or do you want to carry out our research and use of technology for us? Who should define the research and technology innovation agenda? Who should identify the research question? Who should finance? Who should evaluate the usefulness and clinical utility of any new interventions in my country? Here's not only TB, it's about everything in the health system in Brazil. We've learned that in that time, in the end of 90s in Brazil, we faced an intensive marketing for new drugs, diagnostic tests, new equipments, and for the necessity of clinical trials, phase 1, 2, 3, pursuing publications, patents, and registration in our regulatory agents called ANVISA. But no involvement of civil society, citizens, where the products would be used, such products. The information included in the use instructions of the new products, drugs, or tests sells the best performance in measured industrialized countries. But no evaluation under field conditions in our country was performed. No data on clinical use or cost effectiveness or efficiency through pragmatic clinical trials, phase 4. Everybody, including my colleagues, they were interested in phase 1, 2, 3, trials to work with industry. And not only TB, I mean, talk about everything in health system. So diagnosis we made was urgent need, an interaction between TB and AIDS control program, public and private laboratories, research education institutions, biomedical association, nursing, physician, biomedical, regulatory agency, health council, NGOs, industry. Why? Because we should work together, pursuing development and, if it's possible, evaluation the new products in our system, in our different clinical scenario in Brazil, because we are a big country. We have a different social, cultural aspects in the northeast, north. We speak Portuguese, but we are quite different inside the same country. So treatment was proposed by the seminar was to create the Brazilian TB Research Network. It was created on October 5, 2001. We were lucky because we received funded by Ministry of Science and Technology. So we made application, we compete. It was a very huge challenge, but we were able to receive enough funds to start the dream, we can say, for a country regarding tuberculosis. So this network should be characterized by physical, human, and technological resource integrated by thematic areas. The mission of the network was designed that seminar. In year after 2002, we performed a national seminar that we had 500 participants for different areas, and we refined our mission that time. So the mission was to innovate in health area, to capacitate a country for developing new strategies, technologies, and products that could be enabled to diagnose, treat our TB patients. It's true and very important to say that in a multidisciplinary and multi-institutional approach, acting network is very tough. It's not easy. Collaborating with the public policies revision necessary to control tuberculosis when we are asked for is our duty. Instructing high-level human resource in all areas and also developing effective knowledge mechanisms and technology transfer to society. Just briefly, you can say you have researchers working new drugs, natural compounds, animal model, toxic test, clinical test, phase 1 and 2, 3. We have people working diagnosis, a bunch of people below here not working vaccines, but I'm trying to emphasize just this area. People that working with us in network, that work in health services, NGOs, medical and nursing schools, under health units and family health programs. So just briefly, we network, we have to work as using a coordination area to manage and to help people to interact. For that, we have a basic research area. You can see here's a map of Brazil, different states working in this basic area. Is vaccine area, we have São Paulo, Minas, Espírito Santo, different states. Developing new drugs, different states, institutions, obviously. For the diagnostic area, different states and researchers. And for the clinical trials, we have at least 2 states that has been developed a site for developing new drugs and diagnostic tests. And also an area that includes people for different states working operational projects and health system projects also. So finally, in 2004, we've learned that we should have a civil society with us. We should learn with them. And they were invited to take part in our, and we create a new area. I don't know if Carlos is here, but he's our coordinator. It was defined that time to how to include the experience of civil society, how they can be helpful to improve case detection, to increase the demand for that DOTS services, and mainly to reduce the stigma of tuberculosis. It's still very important in Brazil. So what's the 2004? What was the word constituents of our network? Researchers, people works in the state, federal, local programs, TB and AIDS, health service providers, but also I put in red, and I will tell you why very briefly. Policymaking, politicians, health professionals, people living with TB or at risk of infection, people involved in research and their families. Advocates, local authority figures. Why we should I put in the red? Because we've learned that for us, we can get money to buy equipment. We can money to build new buildings, to renovate. We can publish a lot, papers, to get patents. But the most important for us, we've learned with our mistakes, is the human capital. Without human resource, we cannot change anything with the sustainability in a medium long term in our developing country. Sorry. What's the diagnosis we've made? Sharing information with different people. In health system, the healthcare works, a poor morale and motivation, no opportunity for career progression. University technology schools like mine, its curricula, do not match with the country needs. Because we are teaching physicians and nurses for things that they will not face in the future in the public system. So we have to change our curriculum. Physicians are trained to be a consumer. We are in a globalized period. So they are trained to consume new technologies without proper evaluation for different clinical epidemiological scenarios. Even our nurses and physicians. They are simply receiving information from elsewhere and sell the products for the patients. The question is how to empower the healthcare workers in such a way that they perceive that they are also key players in TB control activities, and not only to have fulfilled forms or receive guidelines. How to engage healthcare workers in a self-development and awareness that job is a space for learning, or maybe, and make change based on scientific methods, not in politics. How to include the community, like CORS, that evaluate the efficiency of any intervention using patient-oriented perspectives. Then, that's diagnosis, the treatment. We found a collaboration in the U.S. with the Johns Hopkins. We apply in an ICORT project. It's a training on research. It's a project that is funded by NIH. It was funded in 2005. It's an International Clinical, Operation and Health Service Research Training Award for AIDS and TB. So the key players of this network, this proposal, is in Amar University in Rio. We have three key players in Brazil, a Federal University in Rio, and a Federal University in Espírito Santo, and in São Paulo, a state lab, public lab. In the U.S., we have three different universities leading by Johns Hopkins, Cornell, and Berkeley. The proposal that was accepted by NIH is to train or research healthcare workers and the community. It's not only healthcare workers. The idea is to, in the four level, in the first level, this is a training for 1 week, one day, 2 days, 3 days, for healthcare workers or for people in the community, just to increase the awareness how important it is to perform research in your local when you are working. The second level is is 2 weeks of course, is just to those participants, they are indicated by TB in AIDS programs coordinators or the director of the health units or the hospital. So they send to us the healthcare workers or NGOs, they send to us the community leaders to be interviewed, and then those individuals, they take part in this level course, level two course. And this 2 weeks is mainly to enable the participants to start thinking how to develop a project. What is the science? What is the research question? What's the p-value? What's the best approach if you have a question? What's the best type of model of study should be pursued by you as a healthcare worker or user of the health system? The level three is a more advanced training courses. Some of them have been performed in the U.S., Johns Hopkins, Cornell, New York, or Berkeley. And level four is people that were identified to be fulfilled the criteria for master and PhD program in our universities. So the specific aim for the core, the ICORT, is to train key individuals who can access the efficacy, effectiveness, efficiency of change instituted in healthcare delivery. Establish test sites for intervention in Rio, Espírito Santo, São Paulo. Improve the standard in the delivery of clinical care of TB and AIDS patients. Improve the information technology for tracking patients, integration of clinical and laboratory data. Improve the standard laboratory methods, at least to implement culture for all clinical specimens for those patients that were included in this demonstration area, you can say, but also evaluate the utility and cost effectiveness of newly rapid diagnosed tests for TB or drug-resistant tuberculosis. And obviously, develop a linkage between the Center of Excellence of Health Units with health units and the community in the specific areas in those three states. So just briefly, well, since from October 2005 until October 2007, 490 individuals participate in the level 1 course, 178 to participate in the level 2 course with 80 hours. Level 3, we have 27 individuals, 24 sent to the Johns Hopkins and 3 to UC Berkeley. And now we have at least 12 individuals that engage in master and PhD programs in our country, in our three states. And again, to emphasize, all those individuals, they are health professionals that came from family health program, health center unit, hospital, prisons, and TB labs, and also the users of the health system, NGOs, or from the health council. So regarding the level 2 course, among those 178 individuals, participants, 134 were health professionals, 44 community leaders, and among those, every participant, they during the 2 weeks of course, at the end of the second week, the individual, they identify the key problem that he or she is facing in the health unit. And this key problem become a research question. And with us, each individual develop his or her protocol. So among those 178 protocols, 38 were identified as NICE protocols and were receive award. Just to give a brief idea, a type of research question that were identified by the participants. It's not us, it was not my proposal, it was not a project from the university. It was this project were proposed by the participants, healthcare workers and users. So you can see the first one is a physician. She's a TB control program manager in a Tilbury City, the metropolitan area. The proposal she should perform, she develop it by herself, is to evaluate impact of active finding of TB in the community using family health program. The second is from the state lab in São Paulo, how to decrease the time for DST results given to the health unit. The third is using health professionals' perception of TB in community. The fourth, what's the effectiveness of DOTS in Tilbury City? The following, qualitative analysis of TB mortality in the hospitals and emergencies. Following, capacity building of community volunteers in active finding. The next one, why nurse professionals, they do not use available respirators in our hospital, in isolation rooms, because we do have in our hospital, teaching hospital, isolation rooms, HEPA filter, we do have a respirator, but the nurses, they don't use that. Why? So this question raises a specific methodology, should be answered by a qualitative type of method. And the last one, why TB patients abandon the thought to undertake TB treatment under DOTS? What happened? Why? So just to conclude, our network, it seems that we were facing a successful establishment of this network with high capillarity in the academic, governmental, and entrepreneurship environment. Indeed, it strengthens all the links of the civil society, political actors, and policymakers involved in control of TB. Establishment of worldwide laboratories and services in different fields. High-level training at different levels for professionals, technicians, researchers. Implementation of quality of laboratory tests involved using good laboratory practice, and also in healthcare works working in the clinical aspect, they are facing receiving a course for good clinical practice. We have learned how to deal with intellectual property, patents, regarding vaccine tests or new diagnostic tests. And also we've learned one of the big gaps for us in Brazil, I think it's developing countries the same, is how to have the national industry to be engaged with us, to work with us. That's one of the big problem with us. But we've learned, and we have some small company has been created to start, because we develop a new diagnostics, for example, but we have to need a number of kits to test in a phase 4 trial, phase 3, but for that we need a scale up. And for that, to research labs, or we cannot do that. We do need the help for industry. And I think the last one. I obviously have to acknowledge everybody. I just listed the institutions with a lot of people has been working too much in the last years that we're able to create and maintain this network. And that's my small city, Rio de Janeiro City. It's like beautiful, like Cape Town. And thanks a lot for your attention.
Thank you, Afrânio. I'll now jump from being co-coordinating to give a very small presentation. Yeah, I'll speak very briefly about the grant for DOTS expansion in Brazil, especially regarding the operational research and the community involvement aspects, because it's quite an innovative aspect of that we proposed in the CCM project by Brazil to the Global Fund, which is finishing its first semester now. It's actually from the fifth round of applications back in 2005, but it started very late and started early this year, and now it's finishing its first semester. So basically, this presentation is more to show what was the idea, the proposal, and talk briefly about some results that we have been achieving. Basically, to explain you the project, actually the Brazilian CCM project, it's to expand DOTS in 11 metropolitan areas that will concentrate circa 70% of the burden in the country. It's a 5-year project, about $27 million, but we have like threefold in the counterpart by Brazil. So I mean, the money is actually just to complement some aspects on DOTS expansion and not to fund the Brazilian TB program. And I would like to acknowledge the presence of our NTP manager here and in the principal recipient in the room. The four components of the Brazilian project is the DOTS expansion specific activities, ACSM, like advocacy, communication, social mobilization, and the act like education and information and communication related activities. The third component is the laboratory strengthening, and we have ATB and HIV specific components. I will basically concentrate on the second component, which is CSM and IEC, because they're more related to our work. The workshops, the idea of the CSM is to provide a series of workshops to mobilize different sectors. I mean, not only community activists, but healthcare workers, TB managers, AIDS managers, and other healthcare providers to be engaged in different and be pointing out which should be the activities that should be actually helping Brazil to respond better in TB and to actually implement DOTS. And the central idea of this multidisciplinary workshops and this series of workshops produced is the creation of the so-called metropolitan councils, which would work more or less like a small CCMs in each metropolitan area that should influence the big CCM. I mean, producing outcomes for the following years. And as I said, these workshops are multi-sector, so you have managers, program managers, NGO, people affected, medical staff, and
and they are produced in many different ways. We don't should get into details because they, at this point they don't matter much. But educational campaigns is also another very important aspect of the component number two, which basically is to make awareness raising and to bring information to the different populations, different target publics that we have. I mean, there was specific training on prisons recently and on street populations, so there are specific targeted vulnerable populations being already tackled. And the production and distribution of educational material. Continuing on ACSM activities, there is the supporting for the CCM activities and basically mostly by helping the support participation in the meetings and also supporting the local TB partnership in Brazil, doing workshops and engaging new partners. Also, we have in this component predicted to have a creation of a website and media support to publicize information regarding the project activities. Regarding specifically more related to operational research, there will be funding for 8 research and educational projects, which has a target in the metropolitan areas in these 11 metropolitan areas in 4 different macro regions in Brazil. They are all area covered in Brazil except the Midwest Brazil. Midwest is where Brasilia is in the center of the country, but all the other 4 macro regions are covered. Basically, they are they focus medicine and nurse schools, and the team should be specifically on vulnerable groups. It's an open process. There is a call for proposals, which is it's ongoing now. And there is also predicted in this component workshops with professors and teachers, the students and all different sectors involved in this. So these workshops are to define the priorities of the research that will be conducted, and also evaluate the outcomes of them, and then produce the inputs for the following phases. That's also predicted to a specific activity on collection of data to subsidize operational research proposals for future, as future steps, and also to incentive the creation of scientific leagues by student leagues in the different metropolitan areas. Also in this component, there is basically the project should evaluate, and this the focus of the operational research, which has everything to do with the social mobilization aspect, which is a cross-cutting aspect of this the Brazilian CCM project, which has to focus on attitudes, practice, user satisfaction in health service public unities. And it should have a multidisciplinary and comprehensive approach, and projects will be financially complemented with other related academic initiatives, because the funding for these projects are relatively small, if not to say very small, and then we have to adopt that and cooperate with other initiatives that are ongoing. And then it should have a transparent process of evaluation. The CCM members in Brazil, just going briefly, I mean, we just have a new composition of the CCM, and we have government, academia, bi, multilateral, and private agencies participating, social movement, people affected, that includes, and also metropolitan committees. I mean, that's the idea that I spoke previously. And the idea of these committees locally being decided and involved in not only in the social mobilization activities and uh, in 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 bringing in the inputs to the project. And we also have the new malaria technical committee, because we are proposing, we just had one rejected, but we are intending to reapply on the malaria proposal. And we have a specific executive secretariat which manages this project. So basically, the CCM strategy is to influence through the participation of the metropolitan representation, the committees formed, and the regional workshops. And the most important aspect that I would like to highlight is the aspect that TB and HIV is transversal to the whole project. And the operational research which should be proposed had to do with other activities in the project. And basically increase the contribution of local actors actually to engage them more, being them from the civil society or healthcare workers, but actually trying to interact and to promote a interdisciplinary activity and engaging better in bringing new and innovative results in the country. And this obviously has the aspect to with TB and HIV and AIDS. Basically, that's it. We can have a bigger conversation now. Thank you.
Bettina and Afranio, if you could come up. And so we'll just take some questions. We have a very short amount of time left, but if you could identify yourself and also who the question is for. And please limit these comments to, please limit your remarks to questions, not comments.
My name is Namush from Zambia. My question is for Bettina, for the IPT. In my country, we haven't started this as yet because of the issues to do with how to identify the active case, TB cases in the people who are going to give the IPT, especially for the extrapulmonary tuberculosis. How have you done it in Brazil? Secondly, among the patients who are on IPT, do you have any cases that have developed active TB while they are receiving the IPT? And lastly, we saw the presentation from Botswana 2 days ago, and it showed about over 60% of the patients on IPT defaulted, basically because of shortage of staff to make sure that these patients are brought on board. What have you done in Brazil to ensure that patients on IPT are maintained up to the end of their PT course?
My name is Felix Salanipon from Malawi. Congratulations for the brilliant presentation. I have two questions to the presentation on the RID research. The first one is maybe point of clarification on the constituents of the researchers that I think you are using amongst the category. One of them was the TB, people living with TB. I did find that a bit new term to me. I don't know whether you are referring to latent TB or people that have suffered TB before or activated TB, because borrowing that, the same connotation with people living with HIV. So if you could elaborate on that one. And the second one is on the ICOTA courses. I think that was a brilliant presentation. I wanted to find out about you, whether you have a research policy. You might have guidelines, but I'm looking for a research policy. And again, how you well articulated how you have used these lessons learned, but I wanted to find out how do you make these, the evidence that you find, how do you build it or give feedback to put it back to research in policy and practice? The last one is the last presentation on the Global Fund, on the component 2 on the IEC. There was an interesting presentation you made regarding the workshops that are conducted to teachers, professors in the university. I was wondering, what are your plans in terms of engaging this as the institutional system built in as operational research, as continuous education, as part of the system, whether this is there, other than, because here we learned about the workshops. If not, what are the challenges you have? Thank you.
Okay, thank you for your question. Actually, I didn't have time to go through all the process of ruling out TB, so I'll try to explain it to you. In our intervention, we only start IPT for those patients with TST echo or greater than 5 millimeters, which are those patients with the higher risk of developing TB. But we only start IPT after a clinical evaluation of the patients, so a patient has to be without any symptoms like fever, lost weight, night sweats, and also we perform the sputum smear and the X-ray. Only when all these three criteria, no clinical symptoms, normal X-ray, and a negative sputum, although we know that it's much more common to have negative sputums among HIV patients, only after these three criteria are met, patients are started on IPT. As I mentioned, so far we have included nearly 450 patients on IPT. We didn't have any active TB in these patients during their treatment. Of course, there are some of the patients that are still taking their IPT. And our adherence to the IPT, the isoniazid, which is used in Brazil in 300 milligrams for 6 months, is high. We don't have final results. From the preliminary data, it's above 80%. But we are performing a parallel study using urine tests and a questionnaire with a sample of our patients to have a better information about the adherence. But so far, from the patients that had concluded the IPT, it was above 80% that actually could finish the isoniazid for 6 months without problems.
Regarding the question about living, people living with TB, that's in our culture, individuals that were treated by TB, they had TB in the past. We using the same expression that living with HIV. If we using that living with TB infection, we should have 40% of population to be included in Brazil as developing countries. Regarding the second question, is research policy. I don't know if it became clear that our network is like NGO. So we are not agents that you apply in for projects and you receive funds. It's not the case. We are working like an NGO, so we are searching for funds in order to act like a coenzyme to improve the process. It's different. So any people that are cited as a constituents can enter in the network, just want to contact us and expressing that he or she is intending to develop his or her project, research project, in tuberculosis or TB and HIV. And then it's our duty to try to find out ways to help the healthcare worker or TB manager or the individual for civil, any NGO health council, to enable, to empower them to how to deal with, how to develop her or his project. That's our policy. And the lessons learned, I can tell you, I was waiting for that question, and thanks for that. For me and for my colleagues that especially from the academia side, to work with that NICOTA project, for example, it's what can I say in English? It's a great gratitude for us
when we are working with healthcare workers or even individuals, users for the health system, and then looking at their eyes when they learning that they are able to have their projects, that they are able to become actors, protagonists, not simply individuals that were receiving guidelines. So they start crying because at the end of the second week of the course, they develop their project with us and they show for everybody the summary of the project. Research question, model of, type of study, is a cross-sectional, cohort, case control. They've learned everything. What type of sample size, what type of analysis will be performing the project, should be qualitative or quantitative study. It depends on research question. And after the second week of this course, the health workers become very, very proud about their capacity. And they when they come back to their work, they've learned that the space where they are working is also space for learning. I think that's, in a long term, the idea is to change, as I mentioned yesterday afternoon, our Latin culture is like African culture. We can receive any guidelines, but we feel we will not perceive that we are also developing the guidelines. We will not comply with the proposal. It's different from Asian culture. So we do need to identify specific strategies in our culture, how to bring and incorporate the healthcare workers in the new proposals when we are dealing with several projects, because we can establish several projects for the health system, for the Ministry of Education, but also for them, the healthcare workers that are taking part in a bigger project. It will be very helpful to increase the effectiveness of any proposal. That's our lessons that we learned. I mean, academia, we've learned that we've learned a lot with the community and healthcare workers and how to help them. I think that's my answer.
Thank you. I think we have to wrap it up now. Ezio, do you want to conclude?
Yeah, I will just quickly answer the question posed to me. I mean, the idea of those seminars, they were planned to be engaging professionals in the most affected regions, but having engagement of the local research institutions and local universities and with all the partners that are composing the CCM. And the idea is to interact that, to have an interface between the work in this initiative regarding operational research and also the social mobilization and the sensitization of healthcare workers regarding social mobilization. That's a two-fold or two-sides aspect of this initiative. So the idea is actually to have them together. But and then I would like to conclude. I mean, we started 4 minutes late. We are finishing 2 minutes late, so we are more or less in time. And I would like to thank all the participants who stayed all this Sunday afternoon in this beautiful city, which is very difficult to resist the temptations of Cape Town. I would like to say that this was when Emily and I last year thought about this symposium was actually to highlight the importance of showing the importance of concrete and national initiatives on social mobilization, which has already consistent results like we had in Bangladesh and Thailand, but also show the importance of operational research. Because as I said in a presentation yesterday in the first symposium, I don't believe, and I think not in nothing that can be created by
by heart or will be dependent on political willingness if we don't have strong arguments to change the reality. And to do that, we need data, and this data has to be collected by the people involved as well. So that's the kind of work that we have done in BRAC with Amara, and I have done the famous TB reports that I have some copies here in Portuguese and in English, and also at the booth of the Open Society Institute. And we can only change actually the reality of TB in doing and evaluating the methods and methodologies that we apply nowadays, because they are actually unsuccessful, because if they were successful, we wouldn't have the picture that we have in TB and in the co-infection. And therefore, we need to engage community people in operational research, and that we to say colleagues that are here in this presentation has shown an enormous willingness to engage community participants in their initiatives and community activists from different parts to be producing better services and to produce data. So thank you very much for your interest. Thanks the Open Society Institute and the Public Health Watch for the incredible support that it has been giving throughout these years. And I pass to Emily for the final words.
Well, thank you very much. And if you have any further questions, our panels will be around for a few more minutes. Thank you.